Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk with our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson, about the redistricting going on here in the state of Pennsylvania and across the country. I don't know if you saw it in Arizona. They impeached one of the people on the so-called bipartisan commission to redistrict the state of Arizona. The governor and the Republicans there threw her out, I guess. The districts were a little too competitive for their taste, so out she went, the independent. Because there they have two Republicans, two Democrats, and an independent, she was the chair of it. But since those districts were a little too competitive for the Republicans' taste, they booted her out. We'll also talk about the vouchers and the whole profitization of public education here in the state of Pennsylvania and across the country with our good friend Erwin Aronson. Also in the second hour, Pennsylvania State Representative Eugene DePasquale going to be here talking about the shale cram down that has happened, where evidently the very people who say, oh, we believe in local, we believe in, you know, local government taking care of it, evidently, we're taking that power away from them when it comes to taxing and regulating the Marcellus Shale. So it'll be interesting talking to him. Also, Dustin Slaughter, going to be here talking about the Occupy Philly. The guest we originally had lined up evidently has been, well, detained. He was arrested today at the Occupy Philadelphia. Going to talk to Dustin about him in his place, about what went on today and the 99-minute general strike. And in the third hour, Susie Cagle, cartoonist and journalist for Alternate Truth Out and a number of other California-based groups, are going to be here talking about the Occupy Oakland general strike. I've seen reports between 1,000 and 5,000 people out in the streets. And I think that's a good start. Well, you know, it wasn't the big number that, you know, the media had pumped it up to be. It was a start. You're getting people out on the street and you're getting people involved, active. So I think that's a good thing. It'll be interesting talking to her. Also, your calls tonight, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Something on your mind, question, comment. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So happy Free Speech Day. I mean, it's amazing on this day where you have thousands of people into the streets. You have thousands of people in their capitals and in cities across this country standing up and saying, hey, enough. And you go back through history. On this day, 1909, you had 150 people arrested in Spokane, Washington. The free speech fights of the early part of the century. Where workers and good government people and consumer advocates and human rights advocates were out in the streets saying, you know what, the inequality in this nation is so great, the gulf between the haves and the have-nots so great that they were out in the streets. And you go, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And, you know, someone told me, you know, you want that to come back around, wait 100 years. It'll come back. And we're just reliving that entire cycle. I mean, it's amazing. Almost 100 years, 102 years to this day. They were fighting for the very same thing that people are out in the streets fighting for today. You know, the reality is this free speech day celebrated by men and women across this nation. And they're taking part in protests all across this country. And like I said, why? Well, the fact that the top 1% have been allowed to buy our politicians to do their bidding. The top 1% has been able to evade paying taxes by manipulating the system for themselves, by changing tax codes. And look, I don't blame them. I don't blame Bill Gates. I don't blame Warren Buffett. You know, this whole idea, oh, well, you're envious. No, I'm not envious. I think that they have broader shoulders. And in any society, the strongest help everybody else. Not envious. What I find amazing is that we've allowed that to happen. We've allowed, as a society, there to be a sliver of us who are completely in a different world than we are. But it's not envy. It's saying, look, as a society, we need to have certain things. We need to have roads and bridges and education and healthcare and all of those, national defense and all of those things that we as a society said are important. Somebody's got to pay for that. And who does that? Well, it's the people who have the money. And the only discussions I hear going on right now are, how do we go back and undo all those promises we made to those working people? How do we undo all of those promises that we made to people who are about to retire, who have been paying into a retirement system? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But at the end of it, happy Free Speech Day. The president was out doing a little free speeching today as well. He was at the Key Bridge in Georgetown. He's out there pushing his jobs bill, like he should be. He called out Speaker Boehner. He called out Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, and of course, Paul Ryan, Republican by name, pointing out the fact that, look, 72% of the people in this country, they support increasing funding for infrastructure. Create jobs by building stuff. 72% of the country. And I think the president's right when he said there's no excuse for 100% of Washington Republicans to say no. He said that means Republicans in Washington are out of touch with Republican voters. He continued by saying the American people are with me on this. And I think they are. I think the American people are solidly behind him. We should have the state of the art, the cutting edge infrastructure on this planet. And it's not just roads and bridges. It's airports. It's waterways. It's sewer systems. It's internet access. It's fiber optic lines. It's all of that stuff. And he also criticized Congress for, as I've been doing, criticizing the legislature, criticizing Congress for doing things that I don't think are helping us get people back to work. Today, they voted on commemorative coins and a resolution reaffirming In God We Trust as the national motto. And he said, that's not putting people back to work. The president said, I trust in God, but God wants us to help ourselves by putting our people back to work. And he said, construction workers want to do their jobs, and we need Congress to do theirs. And I agree with him. We absolutely need to get people back to work and stop with this stuff. Stop with the divisiveness. Stop with the look, we're heading down the road. There's another budget fight coming up. We spent days talking about In God We Trust. I get it. We're okay. But we're heading up to another crisis, another hostage situation. So yesterday, the president says he was asked if Americans were better off today than they were 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, no. 4 years ago, we were in a lot better shape. They should have said since the crash. And he says, well, you know, I think we are better off than we would have been had I not taken the steps that we took. He said, I don't think the country is stronger yet than it was when the economy was still booming and we didn't have the Wall Street crisis. He said, we didn't have the housing bubble burst, but we've made steady progress and we just need to make more. And I think that's a very good assessment of where we are. Well, Speaker Boehner, well, obviously nothing that comes out of Obama's mouth Boehner's ever going to agree with, and he loudly blurts out that, are you kidding me? Why don't you go ask those 14 million Americans who are out of work whether they're better off? And then it just degraded from there with finger-pointing and name-calling and, you know, the same hyperdrive stuff that they do when they have no plan, no idea how to get us out of this. Understand, it was their policies that caused this crisis. It's that whole pro-business, laissez-faire policy. Oh, yeah, let Wall Street do whatever it wants. That's what got us into this mess. And that's what's holding us down. But they want to take us back to those good old days. Good old days of the 90s, the 1890s. And I look at this Human Development Index put out by the UN Development Program. Their annual Human Development Report, where they said, you know what? The United States, fourth best country in the world to live. But when you adjust that for income inequality, it drops all the way down to 23rd. And I go, well, why do we care about income inequality? Because you're taking those who are skewing the whole system out of it, the people who are doing wildly well, the folks who can afford to pay cash for their health care. They don't have to depend on a job for health care, for health insurance. They don't have to depend on the government for health care. Like Limbaugh, he just paid out of his pocket. No pocket change. But you look at this report, and there's some glaring things. The number of other rich countries who have done what we've done, fourth overall, 23rd as a whole when you take income inequality. Number of other rich countries in the same boat. Canada, for instance, sixth best place to live in the world, 12th when you adjust for income inequality. South Korea, who we now have a free trade agreement with, 15th overall, down to 28th of the 187 nations. Now, what they look at life expectancy, access to education, and standard of living in terms of income. You know, how much money you're getting, what the income level of the nation is. And you look at the countries that did very well. Norway topped the list again. In fact, they've been in that top place nine of the past 11 years. So by far, you know, they claim the best place to live. Australia came in second. The Netherlands ranked third. They also had some inequality numbers drop down. They dropped down a couple of slots, not nearly as much as we did. Interesting, though, if you look at union density in Norway, the number one place to live overall, 54% union density. You look at Australia, 20% union density. You look at the Netherlands, 20% union density. Here in the U.S., just above 11%. We're just above, if you look at the OECD countries, we're just above Turkey and Estonia when it comes to folks having a voice on the job. You look at Sweden, who ranked 10th overall, but when you adjusted for inequality, they actually went up to third. You look at Denmark, who they went from 16th overall to 8th when you adjusted. And you look at both Sweden and Denmark. Interestingly enough, union density-wise, upwards of 70% for both countries. So you wonder why they don't have the income inequality that we have here at home. And I think it's pretty simple. The Democratic Republic of Congo was the worst place to live in the world, 187th overall. They were behind Niger, Burundi, Mozambique, and Chad. That was the bottom. And you look at the reality is, and this the report said basically, look, the distribution of income over the last several decades has created these massive gaps of people who have and have not. And it's something that needs to be addressed. And what I keep saying, it's about jobs. It's about having a voice on the job. It's about that union density number that I think is so important. And you look at the fact that John Boehner, who had another interesting, and I love this position, he said, everybody believes we have infrastructure deficiencies and more needs to be spent on repair, replace, and in some cases build new infrastructure. He said, the problem is nobody wants to pay for it. And I got to be honest, I distinctly remember the president's plan, which not a single Republican voted for, by the way. It had a little bit of tax in it. In fact, Greg Sargent over at the Washington Post points out that 0.7% surtax on incomes over $1 million would have paid for it. Pretty simple. And he goes through a number of Republicans who used to be for infrastructure and are still on the fence a little bit, which I would suggest you give them a call. You know, Susan Collins, Lindsey Graham, Shelby, Bailey Hutchinson, Richard Lugar. Give them a call. Say, you know what? We need this stuff. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland is carrying out a general strike and march to shut down Oakland's port today, just days after a police attack on the protest that hospitalized Iraq War veteran Scott Olson. They're calling on workers and students everywhere to launch similar actions. Occupy Oakland's Louise Michael and Boots Riley.
We make the call for general strikes across the country and the world because globally we have recognized ourselves as fellow victims of world capitalism. And now we are building movements so that we won't be victims anymore.
We will march on the Port of Oakland and shut it down. We are doing this in order to blockade the flow of capital on the day of the general strike, as well as to show our commitment to solidarity with the longshore workers in their struggle against EGT in Longview, Washington.
International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 10 President Richard Mead.
We support the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Occupy Oakland movement. We condemn the police action that took place a week and a half ago, Local 10 and West Coast Longshoremen. We were born out of a general strike that resulted from police violence when six of our members up and down the West Coast were shot and killed in 1934. We think that global shipping and the global economy, you know, Wall Street, the too big to fail, is an absolutely appropriate target.
ILWU Local 10 Executive Board Member Clarence Thomas.
This is a movement about fighting corporate rule with worker power. Capitalism has failed us.
Medicaid cuts are threatening to cut off health care for millions. Jesse Russell looks at the Wisconsin impact.
One day after Wisconsin's Department of Health Services sent out Medicaid reform plans that could result in thousands of Wisconsinites being shifted to a plan with higher premiums and reduced benefits, and thousands of others falling off the rolls completely, Families USA has issued a report regarding how the Affordable Care Act will benefit Wisconsinites by expanding Medicaid, essentially the opposite of the Wisconsin reforms. Robert Craig is director of the consumer advocacy group Citizen Action of Wisconsin.
What the Walker administration is proposing is adopting policies that will force tens of thousands of families out of Badger Care and with no other viable option. And so it's really night and day, the comparison between that policy and what happened under the Affordable Care Act.
The Families USA report looks at the year 2019 because the authors wanted to choose a time when all the Act's reforms had matured. According to the report, the Act will put more money back in the pockets of Wisconsinites, with households that earn less than $100,000 per year, saving on average $2,040. Households with incomes under $30,000 per year will save on average $3,405 per year.
Bank of America dropped its $5 debit card fee after customer Molly Catchpole launched a campaign against it on Change.org. More than 300,000 people from all 50 states forced Bank of America to drop the fee. Citi, Chase, Wells Fargo, and SunTrust also dropped similar fees after Molly's campaign was launched. This newscast made possible in part by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Ever check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So our quote of the day comes from Ron Paul, a Gettysburg College graduate, also got his medical degree from Duke University. He wants to get rid of federal student loans. Evidently, it's his belief that the federal government is the reason that tuition has gone through the roof. He says, "I went to school when we had none of those. I could work my way through college and medical school because it wasn't so expensive? You know, I asked the question, gee, Ron, you know, why wasn't it expensive? Could it be that taxpayer dollars were going to fund public universities, going to help out? Maybe that grant money to the school? Maybe just a thought. But what frightens me is you look at what we're doing to higher education and how it's quickly becoming out of the reach of average, everyday, middle-class kids, and even some of the ones above them. I say we're going to be seeing that kind of stuff K through 12. We are in the process of profitizing and privatizing public education, and that scares the hell out of me. That's why I've asked our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, to come talk to us a little bit. Irwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Saint, good to be here.
You know, I look at this new report from the folks over at Demos, and they have said that college tuition since 1980 has tripled. And you go, why did that happen? Big part of me says, as a government, both on the state and federal level, we walked away from education and left it on the shoulders of those who couldn't afford it.
I think that you're being very charitable. We didn't walk away from it. We ran away from it. It was the 100-yard dash, and it was completed in the most rapid fashion of anybody who ever ran that sprint. It is shocking. It's appalling. It so happens that earlier today I was meeting with a group of students from Penn State University who had come to Harrisburg to meet a number of labor leaders, union reps who work in the Harrisburg area. And I learned from them that, and this is shocking to me, Penn State University, Pennsylvania's land-grant university, only gets 6% of its annual funding from the state. 94% come from other sources. Yep. And that's scary because what it means to the cost of education for our children, because that's the school, that's one of the schools that's supposed to exist to provide access to higher education to the families, to the children of families who work for a living. But what's more shocking, not only is this funding slash and this whole ongoing distance from access to education for our children, but also where schools like Penn State and so many others need to make up those funding shortfalls, because that means they have to rely on corporate America. And now we have this massive change in how education is delivered, and education is delivered with a bias. Instead of people learning how to think, they're being told what to think.
Yep.
By the corporate sponsors of major universities, and it's trickling down very rapidly to the next level into K through 12 education, and we're seeing it right here in Pennsylvania. I fear that we're not too far away from seeing the Harrisburg Wells Fargo High School or the Carlisle Comcast Elementary School or Middle School.
Yeah, or the Koch Brothers University. I mean, you look at that story not too long ago we talked, I think it was Florida State University, that the Koch Brothers gave something like $2 million, which to me is a lot of money personally, but for a university the size of Florida State, $2 million is kind of a drop in a bucket, but it gave the Koch Brothers veto power over any economics professor hired in their business school.
Yep, it is shocking. It was bad enough a couple of years ago when some Arab sheikh gave money to Columbia University and attempted to assure that certain dimensions of study, pursuing the virtues, if you will, of the Sharia law would be required at Columbia. Now we've gone full circle, and the Koch brothers, who have raised almost into an art form the notion of how you buy a government, are now in the business of snapping up educational facilities for pennies on the dollar.
No, I mean, if you look around, I mean, the big money, that's where they're going. I mean, Rupert Murdoch said 10% of their holdings they want to have in education. You look at Jeb Bush has just started a group that's going to look at how they profit from private education. And you look at all the money that's pouring into the state of Pennsylvania and other states across the country to do public education what they've done to higher education, which is profitizing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The profitization of education is one of the huge challenges, and how we can stop it or at least wrap our arms around it and turn this around until we do, as I've said in another context on this show, among the greatest threats to democracy that we know, because democracy as we know it is predicated on an educated electorate.
Yep.
And we are dismantling the educational aspect of educating the electorate.
You know, we had a girl on, a young woman on here recently, Desire Grover, her name was, and she was talking about this story in Chester County where some 60 kids may not be able to graduate because they don't have certified teachers, because they don't have the money. And you know, this is one of those stories that I've said, this is the beginning. This is what's going to happen all across this state as public education is starved to death, and we're going to watch it die right before our very eyes. And all of those people who are left behind because they can't get into the charter schools, they can't get into the private schools for one reason or another, they're going to be the ones who are the casualties of this transition.
Well, hold on to your wallets and hold on to your head and heart, because right now in Pennsylvania, charter schools are not required to have certified teachers in the classroom. That's one of those mandates that the charter school law does away with. So in a charter school, we can have teachers who are allegedly educating our children who don't have to meet the same standards as teachers in the public schools that are run by school districts. Charter schools, of course, are public schools as well, funded by taxpayers, but they operate under a different set of standards. And if you don't think that someday, somewhere, somebody is going to decide that the high school diplomas of kids graduating from those schools are somehow depreciated because of the failure of our minimal laws to require that teachers be certified in those charter schools, you're making a mistake. And hold on to your wallet just one more time, because that voucher bill called Senate Bill 1 that was passed last week in the state Senate as moved on to the state House would fund private schools that don't have any standards at all and use taxpayer money to do so.
And you gotta wonder how's that possible? How is it possible that we would hold this silver bullet up, this wonder of charter schools and all of this stuff, and not have at least the accountability that you have for the public schools that you claim are failing? I mean, how do you know if the charter schools are doing any better if you aren't holding them accountable and you don't have some measurement for them?
Well, listen, one of the aspects of that legislation that's passed last week and one of the aspects of the current charter school law that operates in Pennsylvania right now is that when we decide what is a failing school, charter schools, private schools, parochial schools are not in the mix. They're not among the schools that are considered. At a minimum, not only should they have to meet the same oversight standards and have the same transparency and accountability and ethical practices in contracting that public schools that are run by school districts have, but what we really have is this idea that no matter how great schools are going to be, there's always going to be some number that are at the bottom. The bottom might be 1,000,000% better than it is today, but it's still going to be the bottom, and all of those will be under assault. Yet a private school collecting taxpayer money to pay the tuition of a select few at a charter school that's collecting taxpayer money but still dealing as an exclusive, not an inclusive institution, doesn't get counted in how we determine what is on the bottom.
Yeah, it's one of these things that is angering on so many levels, but how do we stop it?
Well, how we stop it is the way we stop so many things. We have to become engaged. Those of us who are voters, who are registered to vote, have an opportunity, particularly this election cycle coming up next Tuesday on November 8th, because that's when we elect school boards. That's when we elect local and county officials. That's when we elect township supervisors and borough commissioners and city council members and, county executives in those counties where they have the county executive home rule charter. And that's where we can have our voice first heard, because those school boards control local school budgets. And they can have a voice, and their voice can be heard from wherever that school district is all the way to Harrisburg if they so choose. But if we don't step up to the plate and get out to vote in what I'm told is going to be a very low turnout election cycle, we are ceding and just giving away our capacity to deal with these fundamental issues. And while it's nice to talk about and critical to talk about jobs bills and bank bailouts and protecting the automobile industry and shoring up the motorcycle plant down at Harley-Davidson in New York. There is nothing more essential, nothing more critical, and nothing more valuable, and nothing more moving than how we focus on how we treat our children, what tools, what opportunities we provide to our children for the next generation of our society. These are the seeds that we plant and sow, and often we don't live long enough to see those seeds sprout into saplings and grow into mighty oaks. But if we don't plant the seeds at all, we know what the result will be 5, 10, 20, 50 years from now.
So let me ask you this, you know, and to kind of move this to a different direction. You know, as we look at this redistricting going on, the way I'm looking at this gerrymandering, or you call it whatever you want, a jerry-rigging, we're in this state almost mandating that the people who are bringing us this privatization, this profitization, this destruction of our public education system are going to be entrenched for another 10 years.
Well, that certainly seems to be an objective way to look at what's been proposed and what has been passed around and what is subject now to comment for the next 30 days, and our die will be cast within the next 30 days for how we will be governed for the next decade. And it is a classic lesson for all of us who are students of government in how might makes right, and with the situation, whatever party it is, it happens to be the Republican Party this time, but one-party rule in the legislative, both pieces of the legislative branch, as well as the governor's mansion, yields something, and it's not right, and it's not nice, and it is a fundamental defeat of democracy, and we need to be worried about it. All one need do is look at the proposed senatorial district that had been the 15th senatorial district, including virtually all of Dauphin County and a few other communities besides, and see how that has been gerrymandered to be a horseshoe around Harrisburg so as to protect an existing incumbent and deny the opportunity for any possibility of a competitive election. And we have learned all we need to learn about how might imposes instead of might considering.
Oh, but Senator Pakola never asked for anything.
Well, take a look at Senator Pakola's campaign contribution list, and we find all of these major purveyors of this educational bomb that is being dropped on us, passing out cash to Senator Pakola and his campaign committee like it's going out of style. And in order to assure that he'll still be there to collect their money and destroy our children's futures, they drew a Senate district that's a horseshoe around Harrisburg.
Nice reward for him.
I'm sorry?
Nice reward for him. You know, and I used to think, I got to be honest, I used to think the answer to this was having a bipartisan commission. I look at what Arizona has, two Democrats, two Republicans, and an independent. They were supposed to come up with competitive districts. It looks like now they're impeaching the independent because maybe those districts were a little too competitive.
Yeah, well, this is a very, very breathtakingly, destructively planned process that is aimed at doing exactly what the Tea Party people say they're against, exactly what the conservatives say they're against. This entrenches a particular type and group of people, and the only thing we can do if it is imposed upon us is pray for the demographic change that happens exclusive of them. The demographic change that has shifted population from western Pennsylvania to eastern Pennsylvania, that has resulted in Camille Bud George from up in Clearfield County, after all these years, more than 30 years in the General Assembly, finding that his legislative district has been eliminated. And if this plan goes into effect, he who lives in Kerwinsville, Pennsylvania, will find that his constituency that has been assigned to him is somewhere out in the southeast corner of Pennsylvania, and that is that. So we need to deal with the fundamental unfairness, and part of the problem is that because this happens only once every 10 years, the people who see the injustice today are not in place a decade later when the next go-round happens, so it happens all over again. This is, in my career, the fourth redistricting that I have observed as a participant in the broader base process.
So last question.
Each time it happens, it's shocking.
Last question I've got for you. You said there's a 30-day period. Where do people go to comment on this?
They go right on the website in which it's posted, PA.gov, and they can comment there, or they can write into the Legislative Redistricting Commission at the state capitol and offer up their comments. And remember, the idea of one person, one vote stands supreme. And at some point, I would hope that the people who style themselves as the protectors of our public treasury, the protectors of citizen democracy, will be those who speak out first, because if ever there was an issue that was tailor-made for the people, for those who describe themselves as the Tea Party and the Tea Party advocates.
This is another one.
This is one.
Yep, this, and along with the election rigging scam that they're trying to ram down our throats as well.
And also that the voter ID issue, you know, the solution for a problem that is yet to exist.
Absolutely. Irwin, always great talking with you. We will make sure that we get up on our website where people can go and have their voices heard on this issue. I appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance.
Thanks
so much.
Take good
care, and we'll talk again next week.
All righty. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Jamie Dimon of New York City made a donation to the New York Police Foundation this spring. "These officers," Mr. Dimon said at the time, "put their lives on the line every day to keep us safe." Yes, they do. But was this a nice gesture by a civic-minded citizen, or the purchase of special protection? When Jamie Dimon says, "keep us safe," I doubt he means us hoi polloi. Rather, I suspect he wants police officials to keep Wall Street bankers like him safe from us. Dimon is chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase, the financial giant that helped crash our economy, took billions of banker bailout dollars from us, keeps paying outlandish executive bonuses, refuses to lend the capital our real economy needs to create jobs, is now gouging consumers with new fees, and is presently lobbying in Washington to kill regulations that would protect us from more banker greed. The $4.6 million donation that Dimon delivered is the largest ever received by the Police Foundation. He even got a thank you note from Police Chief Raymond Kelly expressing profound gratitude. But Dimon's bank got its biggest thanks in mid-September when the Occupy Wall Street movement launched its protest. According to a member of Occupy's legal team, the original plan was to base the protest encampment in Chase Plaza, right in front of the big bank's Wall Street offices. However, no go. The NYPD was there in force ahead of the protesters, preemptively shutting down the plaza. Thus, the Occupy movement settled in at Zuccotti Park, well out of sight of the J.P. Morgan Chase honchos. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, this apparent purchase of police power is exactly the sort of corrupt coziness between corporate and governmental elites that has brought people into the streets. It just confirms the necessity for a democracy uprising in America.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light, hey, stand up for your rights. Come on, get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Let's go to Andy in Oakland. Andy, what's going on there, brother?
Reporting in from the docks, Rick. We shut it down.
I hear some 20,000 people on the streets there.
At least, man. It is an amazing sight. There are so many people here.
So all of the early reports that the general strike has failed, I'm guessing it's a little different scenario right now.
Well, none of these Chinese goods are going to leave this port tonight. That's for sure.
Well, that's
good. And the trucks that were packed and ready to go. They stopped in their tracks. They're all over this road that leads into the port. It's maybe 5 or 6 miles long, and the trucks just had to stop in their tracks because there's too many people. They can't move.
That's fantastic. What's the atmosphere like there?
Festive. Very festive. I was there in the morning. They did 3 marches today. All were well attended. I did one at like 9:30 in the morning. I got into a march, and we went around Oakland, the city hall, and a bunch of the banks, and, yucked it up quite a bit. And very festive, live bands, people playing, people giving speeches. Angela Davis gave a speech this morning to the crowd. I left about midday and took a few hours to do some work, and then I came back again at like 5:30 tonight and joined the march down here to the docks.
So would you say the general strike has been a success?
Oh, absolutely. I walked through about a dozen blocks of Oakland this morning, and the town was really quiet. I'm not sure what it's like generally, but there wasn't much traffic in town. And where they had the demonstrations and where the encampment is, right by City Hall, the center of town, most of the businesses there were closed down and participating. Matter of fact, a lot of people set up their restaurants by the encampment to help feed people. There was all kind of free food. There was a free coffee shop there with free coffee. It was just wonderful. It was a real festive atmosphere.
I mean, at the end of it, it's good for business to make friends with these folks, because those are customers into the future. But are you in looking at the police presence there now, because there has been, we've talked about it on this program a bunch, there's been a bunch of trouble. What's the police presence like today?
Except for helicopters flying above us, hardly any. There were a few at a big corner of the intersection as you came into the docks, like maybe a dozen or so. That was it. There's none in sight where I am now for about 5 miles of walking or so. I haven't seen a cop.
So let me ask you this. Tomorrow.
During the day today, they were non-existent.
So let me ask
you. There.
Tomorrow we're going to hear the right wing going ballistic about how everybody destroyed the city and tore everything up. Have you seen many a-holes out there doing dumb stuff?
No, it's like a party. It's like a big party. It's very festive. Everybody is really cool, well-behaved. And like I said, not a cop in sight. The cops cause more trouble than they're worth overall, because they instigate the problems, especially when they come out in their riot suits. But I didn't see it. I don't think this morning when I walked, I didn't think I saw one cop around, and everything was fine. I mean, there was no problems and no anything. I mean, everybody was just having a good time.
How long do you think this is going to last?
Man, I'll tell you, Rick, there are so many people here at the docks. I wouldn't doubt that there might be a core group of a few thousand that'll just sleep out right in front of the entrance or something. I'm at a general assembly right now. You might be able to hear the mic check.
Yeah, we hear it in the background.
General assembly. There are about 100 or 200 people in a big circle.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent news. Andy, I appreciate it. Keep us up to breast of the date. If anything else is going on tonight, we'd appreciate any input one way or the other.
All right. Every American should see this. This is a wonderful sight. The community has just really come together for, Mr. Olson that's in the hospital right now. And, God, it's just great. And it's a big mix of people. A lot of young people of all ages, but a lot of young people here. It's just a wonderful sight.
Do you see many soldiers in uniform out there today? Because I would assume...
A couple. Yeah.
Already.
I saw some Navy people, and I saw some people in fatigues, Army fatigues.
Outstanding. Andy, I appreciate it. Let us know what goes on as the night progresses. I'd appreciate it.
All right. Well, there's no trucks coming out of here tonight, I'll tell you that.
I wouldn't think so.
All right.
Thanks so much, brother.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, so much for it. It was a flop. Wow. We got some pictures over at our Facebook page, Rick Smith or TheRickSmithShow.com there. Right back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Jamie Dimon of New York City
made a donation to the New York Police Foundation this spring. These officers, Mr. Diamond said at the time, put their lives on the line every day to keep us safe. Yes, they do. But was this a nice gesture by a civic-minded citizen, or the purchase of special protection? When Jamie Diamond says, keep us safe, I doubt he means us hoi polloi. Rather, I suspect he wants police officials to keep Wall Street bankers like him safe from us. Diamond is chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase, the financial giant that helped crash our economy, took billions of banker bailout dollars from us, keeps paying outlandish executive bonuses, refuses to lend the capital our real economy needs to create jobs, is now gouging consumers with new fees, and is presently lobbying in Washington to kill regulations that would protect us from more banker greed. The $4.6 million donation that Diamond delivered is the largest ever received by the Police Foundation. He even got a thank you note from Police Chief Raymond Kelly, expressing profound gratitude. But Diamond's bank got its biggest thanks in mid-September, when the Occupy Wall Street movement launched its protest. According to a member of Occupy's legal team, the original plan was to base the protest encampment in Chase Plaza, right in front of the big bank's Wall Street offices. However, no go. The NYPD was there in force ahead of the protesters, preemptively shutting down the plaza. Thus, the Occupy movement settled in at Zuccotti Park, well out of sight of the J.P. Morgan Chase honchos. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, this apparent purchase of police power is exactly the sort of corrupt coziness between corporate and governmental elites that has brought people into the streets. It just confirms the necessity for a democracy uprising in America.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yeah, well, that's what the Republicans, I think, want you to believe. And I look at what Texas Republican Lamar Smith said. There are few things Congress could do that would be more important than passing this resolution, reaffirming that in God we trust, is the official motto of the United States. And, you know, chiming in with him, Republican Representative Trent Franks, who told colleagues that without this resolution, there is no longer any reason for us to gather in this place. Is this, you know, look, yeah, I know some people take their God seriously, and you know, in my church, I do too. Was this worth an entire day and a half when we could have been talking about jobs bills? We could have talked about getting people back to work. And I look at what Reverend Barry Lynn said, executive director of Americans United. The good reverend said the American people want action on jobs and the economy, yet this Congress continues to waste time pandering to the religious right. This meaningless, purely symbolic vote won't create one job, won't help one family struggling to pay its mortgage or rebuild one piece of infrastructure. He says, I think we know by now this Congress likes God. Can we move on? So the vote, you know, because who wants to be labeled anti-God, was 396-9. And I did something today I got to say I'm not proud of. There was one Republican, Justin Amash, who voted against it, because there's one Republican who hates God. So I sent out an email to, you know, one of the prayer list groups that I ghost on, saying that Justin Amash hates God because he voted against this piece of legislation. And what scares me is the responses that I got back from the people who call themselves the moral conscience of our nation. The people who are the Bible thumpers, the God squatters, the ones who will preach to you on a street corner. Evidently, Mr. Amash is a second-generation Arab American of Palestinian, Christian, and Syrian descent. Second generation here. He attended Kellogg'sville Christian School. He attended the Grand Rapids Christian High School. Law degree from Michigan University of Michigan. I got responses back from people going, well, we know that he's really a Palestinian. Or he's really a Syrian. He's not really a Christian. A real Christian wouldn't vote against In God We Trust. Would he? Now, this has got this guy, Tea Party favorite, endorsed by the Club for Growth, endorsed by Ron Paul, endorsed by Freedom Works. Tea Party favorite, right there at the top, man. Gee, I wonder why he would vote against that. And you know what? I got to give him credit if he truly believes his Tea Party BS, that the Constitution actually means something. Because understand, In God We Trust was thrown in there in the 50s, 1956, I believe. If you remember, the Pledge of Allegiance, under God, was inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance on July 11th, 1954. Until that point, it wasn't there. During the 50s there, when we had the whole Cold War thing, we got real godly and started putting it everywhere, which I think we're doing again. Keep your religion to yourself. I'll believe what I believe what you believe, and leave it out of the public. Try acting like a decent human being. And I see the right going nuts that Obama had said E Pluribus Unum was the motto of the United States. And, you know, kind of the, I thought so too. You know, this idea that out of many nations there is one, out of many people there's one, the whole idea, the whole concept of the melting pot, we all come together and make one. Out of all these states, we're one nation. To me, that's the motto. But not to our friends on the radical right. But it passed anyway, because we had to do that. So what I would like to do, and maybe some people can help me, I would love to see us relive 1956 again. Since we've done the God thing, got that, okay, God's out of the way. We are now one nation under God. Not going to argue with you. Can we please have an infrastructure bill like we did back in 1956? In fact, on June 29th, 1956, passed, signed the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, the National Interstate and Defense Highways Act. We built the Eisenhower Interstate System. So now that we've done the God thing, can we do the roads and bridges thing? Can we do the building thing? And speaking of God, speaking of the godly ones, this struck me as particularly funny today. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported that James and Effie Lyons, they came into this windfall in their checking account. So they decided that they were going to be quite generous. They paid off their mortgage. They bought a new car. And then they decided to, you know, to give out money. So anything that had God in it, if you were a Christian group, they were sending you money with checks, big checks too, with God bless and money cometh and love gift and all of this stuff that they wrote on the big checks to all of these religious groups. They spent some $160,000 before they finally got caught. Turns out the $220,039.37 that was put into their bank account by accident wasn't theirs, and they have been charged with theft and unauthorized use of property. Probably going to do some time. They're each looking at a prison sentence of somewhere around 6 years. But, you know, hey, we thought God gave it to us. God wanted us to have it. It was one of God's plans. And as the prosecutor said, he says, I believe God has many plans for many people, but I don't believe stealing $220,000 is one of God's plans. So interestingly enough. And I saw this bishop, His name is Gene Robinson. He is the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of New Hampshire. He was interviewed recently. He said he understands and supports this whole Occupy movement, the 99% movement, really on moral and religious grounds. And he said that he believes that the protests actually fit within the Hebrew Old Testament and the Christian New Testament. If you remember, Pat Robertson said, well, I don't know how a Christian could get involved in this. I just don't know. It's just all craziness. We really don't want Christians involved in this. But Bishop Robinson said, look, 1/6 of all the words that Jesus spoke and 1/3 of all the parables, he said, are about the dangers of wealth and possessions. He went on to say that it's something that we hear from the prophets, particularly of the Old Testament. And, of course, he says that's what Jesus was steeped in. Those were his scriptures. He went on to say that any culture, but certainly one that claims to be godly, is to be judged on how well they treat the most vulnerable. He said it's more than about numbers. It's more than about disparity of income. It's really about our sense of community, Bishop Robertson said. And indeed, he said, the wealthy have a responsibility to the larger community. Are we really going to live in an every man, woman, and child for himself world, or are we going to be a community in which the greater good, the common good, is also a value we hold? And I guess that's the question. Do the wealthy have a responsibility to the community as a whole? Do they? And I stop and I think about this In God We Trust thing. And I don't have a problem with it. I know some folks will. I know some of the, some of the atheists will. And good for them. Fight that fight. But now that we've reaffirmed this, now that we have taken the pledge in the halls of our government, to pledge one nation under God, can we please mean it? Can we please act in the appropriate way? You know, those 10 rules that everyone loves to go, oh, we need to plaster those 10 commandments everywhere. Can we try and follow those? You know, I love to play this game with folks who tell me that we need the 10 commandments everywhere. And it's simply, can you name them? Can you tell me what they are, and can you tell me why they're important? You know, I went through Catholic school. It was beaten into me. You know, I want people to be decent human beings. I want people who are going to love their neighbor, who are going to help their neighbor in times of need. And that's not a liberal thing or a conservative thing. It's the right thing. And maybe we do. Maybe we need to get away from the politic and just be decent human beings who believe in our community, who believe in our neighbors, who believe in our country. Because what I'm seeing going on in Washington and in state legislatures across this country is, I want mine, screw you, and I'm going to do whatever I can do to get it away from you. And if we got to do it like thieves in the night in a back room somewhere, that's how it's going to be done, and we're going to impose our will. You know, I've often said labor unions would be out of business if you didn't have bad employers. If every employer treated their folks, treated them well, would you have the problem? Would you have to fight that fight? The answer is no. So now that we've reaffirmed this, I ask the simple question. Can we please follow that and mean it? It's pretty simple. I mean, the vote was overwhelming. Democrats, Republicans, everybody. I'm just asking, can we mean it? Going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with State Representative Eugene DePasquale. Stick around. Right back after this.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland is carrying out a general strike and march to shut down Oakland's port today, just days after a police attack on the protest that hospitalized Iraq War veteran Scott Olson. They're calling on workers and students everywhere to launch similar actions. Occupy Oakland's Louise Michael and Boots Riley.
We make the call for general strikes across the country and the world because globally we have recognized ourselves as fellow victims of world capitalism. And now we are building movements so that we won't be victims anymore.
We will march on the Port of Oakland and shut it down. We are doing this in order to blockade the flow of capital on the day of the general strike, as well as to show our commitment to solidarity with the longshore workers in their struggle against EGT in Longview, Washington.
International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 10 President Richard Mead.
We support the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Occupy Oakland movement. We condemn the police action that took place a week and a half ago, Local 10 and West Coast Longshoremen. We were born out of a general strike that resulted from police violence when six of our members up and down the West Coast were shot and killed in 1934. We think that global shipping and the global economy, you know, the Wall Street, the too big to fail, is an absolutely appropriate target.
ILWU Local 10 Executive Board Member Clarence Thomas.
This is a movement about fighting corporate rule with worker power. Capitalism has failed us.
Medicaid cuts are threatening to cut off health care for millions. Jesse Russell looks at the Wisconsin impact.
One day after Wisconsin's Department of Health Services sent out Medicaid reform plans that could result in thousands of Wisconsinites being shifted to a plan with higher premiums and reduced benefits, and thousands of others falling off the rolls completely, Families USA has issued a report regarding how the Affordable Care Act will benefit Wisconsinites by expanding Medicaid, essentially the opposite of the Wisconsin reforms. Robert Craig is director of the consumer advocacy group Citizen Action of Wisconsin.
What the Walker administration is proposing is adopting policies that will force tens of thousands of families out of Badger Care and with no other viable option. And so it's really night and day, the comparison between that policy and what happened under the Affordable Care Act.
The Families USA report looks at the year 2019 because the authors wanted to choose a time when all the Act's reforms had matured. According to the report, the Act will put more money back in the pockets of Wisconsinites, with households that earn less than $100,000 per year, saving on average $2,040. Households with incomes under $30,000 per year will save on average $3,405 per year.
Bank of America dropped its $5 debit card fee after customer Molly Catchpole launched a campaign against it on Change.org. More than 300,000 people from all 50 states forced Bank of America to drop the fee. Citi, Chase, Wells Fargo, and SunTrust also dropped similar fees after Molly's campaign was launched. This newscast made possible in part by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So, this Marcellus Shale thing, House Bill 1950, got rammed through the House Finance Committee on a party line vote, 15-10. Again, you know, you look at this and you go, smarmy backroom dealings. What happened to the accountability? Where's the transparency? Where's the openness? Where's all that stuff that the Tea Party kept talking about? I seem to be missing it. And especially the part about local control, really missing that. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Eugene DePasquale come talk to us about this bill and some other stuff. Eugene, thanks for taking time for me.
No, thanks for having me on. How's everything going?
Everything is going as well as can be expected given some of the things that are going on in this state, for one. But I look at this House Bill 1950. Again, you know, I thought it was, what happened to the transparency? What happened to the, we're going to do things differently? What happened to that?
Well, on swearing in day, we were promised that committees were going to be tasked with doing the legwork and the hard work on legislation. You know, hearings, amendment processes, you know, going through everything with a fine tooth comb so that when it got to the floor, whether you agreed or disagreed, that sort of the technical stuff and the vetting had all taken place. This bill was dropped, when I say dropped, meaning, you know, posted for a vote, basically while the Republicans were caucusing, And what that meant was that nobody was expecting it to be dropped. That's our technical term for our non-technical term for when a bill gets posted for a vote. And then it was running in the committee the next day. And I think it was done. It was completely intentional to make sure that amendments to the bill weren't filed in time for the committee vote, and so that they could then jam it through on a party line vote.
Yeah, I look at this, and the one thing that stuck out, and I think most people's mind right away is this page 122, this all local rules, regulations, code, agreement, resolution, ordinance, or other local enactments that regulate oil and gas operations are hereby superseded and preempted. What happened to local control?
I mean, if you think about what the Republican Party preaches, and that is they want to, they say, Washington's too big, Harrisburg's too big. They really promote the local control issue. Well, this flies in the face of everything we've been hearing for a long time. And it's a stunning, stunning portion of the bill. Again, is it a good idea to have consistent statewide standards? Yes. But what you're also saying is that local governments that have passed what they feel are important safeguards for their community, because Harrisburg has not acted for far too long on this legislation, are now going to be deemed basically overturned. And it's just, it's incredibly brazen, but on one hand, but on the other hand, anyone that's paying attention to what's going on these last several months should not be surprised by this.
Not at all. I mean, from the state government and from the federal government, I want a baseline. And I want local communities to be able to say, you know what, the baseline's fine, but we want to go a little bit beyond that to protect our local citizens. This piece, this little bit here, takes that ability completely away.
That is exactly right. I mean, basically, every time the feds pass a law or the state pass a law, it's always, here's the basic minimum protection. And then local, at the federal level, then Pennsylvania or other states could go further than this. Or at the local level, you can go further than this. I've never seen it where you just say you're not allowed to do this. The only time that happens, and it really is the issue with the roads, where there is a preemption, but that's mostly because you can't have different traffic rules driving through 15 municipalities.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, that is the only issue where we sort of recognize. I mean, we just got the texting while driving legislation passed. We all understand that if you have 15 municipalities on a 30-mile stretch and 10 had the rule and 5 didn't or something, it would be crazy to enforce. That's not what we're talking about here when it comes to the local issues with the drilling. I mean, clearly some communities felt they needed to go further than the protections that were already available. And now through the House, where they're saying, nope, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, in bringing up the texting ban, I got to be honest, I beat you up pretty bad last night over that, because I'm not a big fan of it.
Why? Well, I will tell you that about 91% of Pennsylvanians are for the bill and 4% are against. I appreciate that. I just think that when you are driving, if you are texting while driving, you're not only risking your own life, but you're risking the lives of other people on the road.
Yeah, my position is pretty simple, that if you're gonna outlaw that, you should outlaw children, you should outlaw soup, you should outlaw, the person next to you. There are a lot of distractions. I drove a truck for years.
I will tell you, I completely disagree with that. The science is clear on this. The texting is is incredibly more distracting than having kids or in the radio in the car. You're not even looking at the road. You have the now state police even have a test to show you a road map, what happens, what you go through when you're texting while driving. We had just a teen yesterday was actually killed, and the police found when there was a half-written text message on her cell phone as she crashed and was killed while driving. I had a constituent dragged 60 feet to their death. The person that was driving the car thought they hit a pothole, didn't even know they hit a person. The stories go on and on and on about this. When I first introduced this, Washington State was the only state that had it on the books. We now have 35 states that have it on the books. These other states are enforcing it. It's making the roadways safer in those other states. Pennsylvania was now lagging well behind. Like I said, 91% of the people, I've got my email inbox is flooded with people that are very happy about. I appreciate that you disagree, but I vigorously disagree with your position on it. It is not the same as having a kid in the car, and it has even been shown to be more dangerous than drinking while driving.
Yeah, I didn't want to get I didn't want to get away from the topic here, but you know, I drove a truck for years. I've seen people do dumb things. We've already got laws on the books, in my opinion. Reckless driving is a law that we could have enforced.
Yeah, but
Rick,
let me tell you this. I mean, if that were the case, then you wouldn't need drinking while driving laws. Reckless driving is not enough to protect people from the texting while driving. It's clear because people are, I mean, again, the teen that drove yesterday, it was actually not illegal what she was doing, and she's dead. You can't get that life back.
Yeah, and again, you know, I'm sympathetic there, but I don't want to go down that road. I want to get back to the Marcellus Shale. I just wanted to throw that out there because I know someone's going to throw an email to me saying I'm a hypocrite for not at least mentioning it.
I was the first one to introduce this. I dealt with the fight when nobody cared about it. Now 91% of the people want it. So
I give you credit for standing up and fighting for what you believe in. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I think there are already too many rules, but just common sense might dictate. Let's get back to this.
Common sense would also say, though, that you shouldn't drink and drive. We're not going to make that legal.
Well. Well, let's get back to the Marcellus Shale, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine. You brought it up, so I'm defending my position on this.
Because we could argue this all night long. Maybe there's something over a beer one day.
And not driving.
What I'm looking at is, you know, I look at every state in this country, getting back to the Marcellus Shale, every state that has natural gas, they tax it in one way or another, and it helps state. Why are we the only ones who seem to believe that it's not going to help the state coffers? I mean, I get the idea that you want to have local money going to the local people, and I think there's some of that in this.
Well, a couple of things to point out. When you say we, and I know what you're saying, they're asking the general question, 70% of Pennsylvanians, 70%, believe there should be a tax. I believe it is a vast majority of the legislature that wants a tax on the drillers. The drillers themselves have said they can certainly handle a tax. The main reason that we are in this position we're in is that Tom Corbett took a pledge during the campaign to Grover Norquist. I mean, that is the main reason we are in this position. So when we say why isn't it in place, and that is you're dealing with a potential veto threat from the governor. So that's starting off at, you know, sort of the first place is the why, and that is really, you know, it's Governor Corbett's position that there shouldn't be a tax flying in the face of any reason on that. That's number one. Number two, okay, so now, okay, where do we go? So he has said that a fee structure would be acceptable to him that he would sign. Even that fee structure that is in this current bill is 1/8 the size of what the Texas fee or tax structure is. 1/8 what Texas would be. So, I mean, it basically is something to say there's a tax, but it's or a fee, however you want to phrase it, but it's really to get the minimal amount from the natural gas industry, from the drillers. And I believe it's just so they can say they did something and get it off their plate. That's what I believe, that the fee is in there just to say they did it, to get it off the plate, and they're hoping the public will not catch on to that it's basically a non-existent fee.
I mean, because I got to be honest, I look at all the money that we're stealing from education, and I look at this story we talked about this week down in Chester County, where one of the schools, there are 60 kids that may not graduate from the school down there because they don't have certified teachers. And I look at how we're stripping money out of the, I think it was $960 million in education cuts that happened this year, more coming next year. It seems only rational to me that we have this resource and that it should benefit this state in one way or another.
There's no question about it. I think the vast majority of people agree with you. I think the vast majority of the legislature agrees with you. But we are also seeing, this is, I think it's sometimes it's important to look at this as 40,000 feet. If you look at it in just the context of education or the gas drilling, but remember now, what you're seeing, generally speaking, from the Corbett administration is a general movement for less government in everything. I mean, it's really looking to sort of privatize everything. And so if you view it in that lens, this is a pretty consistent theme we're seeing here. I think in so many areas, it's the wrong direction, but that's what you're seeing here. And I mean, because when you say the education cuts, remember, it's not just the education cuts. It's also the aggressive move towards the vouchers. And he's even talking about, you know, eliminating funding for Pitt, Penn State, and Temple next year and giving everybody a voucher to go whatever school they want to in Pennsylvania, even at the higher education levels next year, including the students that are of an income level where they wouldn't need that financial assistance to begin with. So this is a clear, consistent theme of trying to remove the government's ability to help people get ahead. I mean, that's really what you're seeing.
Yeah, and again, that's something we've talked about a number of times, especially since the governor announced his privatization commission, of which when you put someone like Matt Briette on it, there's no chance of anything staying in the hands of we the people.
You know, and again, trying to take a step back and looking at this thing. I mean, we all know, you know, what's that serenity prayer? You know, you pray for, you know, to know the difference between what you can and can't change.
Right.
There are clearly some things that are done better in the private sector and some things done better in the public sector.
Correct.
I mean, for example, I don't think the government should be running pizza shops. That's something that the private sector is doing pretty well. You have choice, you have competition, and you go buy the best pizza you want. When it comes to our roads and bridges and public education, that's something that clearly you need to have a strong governmental role in with the public involved. To give every, so we all have good roads and bridges, and so every kid has an equal chance to get a good quality education. And again, there's some private schools out there for people that want to go down that path. You're seeing a direction from the Corbyn is taking the public out of almost everything.
Yep.
And that is a direction that, you know, when you look at, a lot of that happened in the 20s, and the lack of regulation is what helped lead to the Great Depression. And I think you could also argue that some of the policies during the Bush administration helped lead to the enormous economic collapse that we had in fall 2008 that we're still trying to dig out of now. And some people are saying, let's double down and make it even worse.
Well, that's what it sounds like to me. I mean, this, and I guess the last question I've got for you, and in looking at this guy, how much of this is his real, true, heartfelt ideology, and how much of this is part of the national playbook that we're seeing being played out in states all across this country?
It's tough to say, you know, exactly what's in any individual's mind, but there's clearly, when you see the same bills being introduced in every single state, say when the immigration issue, I'm just going to use one. I mean, come on, the same bill is introduced, you know, in 50 different states. It's just states that have a Republican legislature, Republican governor, or the voter ID bill. I mean, that's a clear example of that is a playbook issue in every single state. And it's a clear strategy nationwide.
Yeah, I look at this and I keep going. At some point, I hope we wake up before it's too late, because the more of this I see happen, you know, you look back to history and as you pointed out, the 20s, what ended up leading us to the Great Depression. I've been reading about the coal industry, and what happened when we didn't regulate that. Look what happened there. And I fear we're repeating history.
The fascinating part about this, and this is just from a political observer point of view, obviously I'm in the legislature, so I'm experiencing on several levels, is that this is also directly flying in the face of public opinion. I mean, usually anybody, even if it's just for your own selfish political interest, is going to at least try to reflect public opinion. I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to disagree a little bit and or you try to explain issues better. But in what you're seeing right now is literally a lack of caring of even what the public thinks. It's just driving right ahead regardless.
Yeah, we're going to do it no matter what you think. This 1950 bill, any chance of stopping this?
Well, we are going to obviously, by the way, the reason why it was done, and I think this is important to realize, is the reason why it was done today, and tomorrow we realized, this was late this afternoon, we recognized that the Republicans made tomorrow what was a non-voting session day. And by that, it means is by 2 o'clock tomorrow, the deadline is closed on being able to file amendments. So the whole idea not only was to jam it through the committee today, but also try to get through Thursday without any amendments filed. Fortunately, we caught that in time so that we can actually have a chance to amend the bill on Monday when I'm sure they're going to try to run this thing on second consideration and try to pass it on Tuesday of next week. I'm talking about after Thanksgiving. So they were hoping to take advantage of the election day break which is next week, so that we would sort of be sleeping at the wheel, not know that they posted it as non-voting day and then non-voting session day, and not then offer amendments. So fortunately, we did that. Amendments are going to be filed. The only shot we have, at least in the House, is to amend that, because I believe that if we're not able to amend it, they will pass it, pass out of the House, and then the ball's going to be in the Senate's court. And, you know, I mean, there's no guarantee of what happens there. The goal will be we're going to be offering what we believe will be good amendments to actually make it a stronger bill. I mean, obviously much stronger. If it's as is, it's a bad bill. But to try to really make it, a real severance tax, and to have real environmental safeguards put into the bill. If that happens, then if we can get those amendments in, then we'll take it from there. But that's the goal. I mean, there's going to be some amendments that are going to be posted, and we'll obviously have to end up filing a lot, but we're going to have to, at the end of the day, focus on two or three that are going to be critical and really try to rally the troops for it.
Yeah. I'd like to see a Sarah Palin amendment. One like they did in that socialist state of Alaska.
That's right. She said share the wealth.
That's right. Representative DePasquale, always great talking with you. I'd love to have you back again real soon.
Hey, sounds good, Rick. Hey, have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Jamie Dimon of New York City made a donation to the New York Police Foundation this spring. "These officers," Mr. Dimon said at the time, "put their lives on the line every day to keep us safe." Yes, they do. But was this a nice gesture by a civic-minded citizen, or the purchase of special protection? When Jamie Dimon says, "keep us safe," I doubt he means us hoi polloi. Rather, I suspect he wants police officials to keep Wall Street bankers like him safe from us. Dimon is chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase, the financial giant that helped crash our economy, took billions of banker bailout dollars from us, keeps paying outlandish executive bonuses, refuses to lend the capital our real economy needs to create jobs, is now gouging consumers with new fees, and is presently lobbying in Washington to kill regulations that would protect us from more banker greed. The $4.6 million donation that Dimon delivered is the largest ever received by the Police Foundation. He even got a thank you note from Police Chief Raymond Kelly, expressing profound gratitude. But Dimon's bank got its biggest thanks in mid-September, when the Occupy Wall Street movement launched its protest. According to a member of Occupy's legal team, the original plan was to base the protest encampment in Chase Plaza, right in front of the big bank's Wall Street offices. However, no go. The NYPD was there in force ahead of the protesters, preemptively shutting down the plaza. Thus, the Occupy movement settled in at Zuccotti Park, well out of sight of the J.P. Morgan Chase honchos. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, this apparent purchase of police power is exactly the sort of corrupt coziness between corporate and governmental elites that has brought people into the streets. It just confirms the necessity for a democracy uprising in America.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I like Representative DePasquale. He seems like a good guy. There's rumors swirling around. I think he's potentially running for Auditor General, if I'm not mistaken. Jack Wagner's position. I think he'd do a fine job there. But you look at this bill, just everything that the Republicans have been telling us, that they believe in transparent government, they believe in accountability and oversight, and they believe in openness. They believe all this stuff. It's their core. It's with their tri-pointed hat and, you know, their wigs and all that. They're out there with the Constitution saying, we believe. Yet they pull something like they've done time and time and time again. I mean, the way I heard it, they picked the smallest room as far out of sight as they could get so that maybe nobody would notice. And then when you add in that little provision, that localities, the local governments can do nothing. Is that what Republicans believe? I mean, is that the core of your party, folks? I'm kind of baffled by that. You know, I've always believed that, you know, the federal government, the state level, that you set the baseline. Say, you know what? This is the minimum amount of protection. This is the minimum level it can be. If you, being closer to the problem, want to make that a little stronger, you have the ability to do it. It's kind of like the minimum wage. We've decided that there's a minimum wage in this country. But if you so choose, like numerous states across this country have done, if you so choose to make that minimum wage a little bit higher, you are perfectly free to go and do that. And, you know, I look at this, and what's frustrating to me is this is an opportunity to really make this state a very wealthy state. You know, I look at West Virginia. There is no reason on this earth that West Virginia is one of the poorest states in this country. There's no reason, because they have got natural resources out the wazoo. What they've allowed, though, is they've allowed people to steal it and take it out. And they separate the people by giving some of them, you know, decent jobs for the area. Are we doing the same? Are we setting ourselves up for the same thing here? Are we going to have to relive the same troubles we had during the coal boom? Because understand, when those towns sprung up, it was boom. It was boom. And then it was bust. Instead of having a long view of things, are we allowing this to get out of our hands? And look, I want to make sure we get off foreign oil like anybody else. I want to get off of other nations' energy just like anybody else. I want us to be energy independent, but I want to do it in the way where we're not sorry we did, where the air and the water and the land are polluted. Now, I'm not one of the people who are going to say, well, no, we need to stop the drilling. I know that's not going to happen. Be rational, be realistic. You're not going to stop it. What you may be able to do is say, you know what, you can do it, but you got to follow some rules, and you've got to make sure that we have strict oversight, that we catch things before they get out of hand. Because if we let this go, we let this industry, and I think it's almost too late now, but if we let this go, you don't get it back. You don't get the horse back in the barn. Not happening. And this impact fee or whatever you want to call it, it's no way. Enough revenue in the state. But like Representative DePasquale said, there's nothing that these people believe is ours. Nothing we the people. Everything in the hands of for-profit interests, private interests. Conservative world. Things we've talked about before. Yeah, there are people who think that the police department should be privatized. We should have no public police. The fire department should be all privatized. We should have no public fire people. That there should be nothing that is ours. Because they don't believe in we the people. And, you know, I go back to the original life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Where they got that from was the original one was supposed to be life, liberty, and the pursuit of private property. It's that worldview that I believe is tearing this country apart. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dustin Slaughter. He was at the Occupy Philly today. The person we were supposed to have evidently detained Hopefully he'll be out of jail soon. But we'll talk to Dustin Slaughter when we get back, talk about what happened there in Philly today. Quick break, back after this.
Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So I'm looking at pictures of what's going on in Oakland as we speak. Some 20,000 people have shut down the port there in Oakland. And, you know, these are the kind of things that I think are important to get media attention, because what I've been hearing all day is, oh, it's a joke. Oh, it's going to fail. Oh, it's a failure. I'm looking at these pictures and I'm going, that's no joke. And that is not a failure. And you look across this country, you're seeing people dedicated to the cause, people toughing it out in some of the crummy weather we've had recently. And today in Philadelphia, they had the 99-minute general strike. So I've asked Dustin Slaughter, the founder of the David and Goliath Project, to come talk to us about what went on today in Philly. He's in Philadelphia as we speak. Dustin, thanks for taking time for me.
How you doing, Rick? Nice to be back on.
You know, I look at what's going on, 99-minute strike today. A good action, I think, to get more people involved. But I'm looking at these pictures, 20,000 people out in the streets in Oakland as we're speaking.
It's fantastic, Rick. I mean, the turnout out there has just been tremendous.
So let me ask you, what's going on in Philly tonight? What happened today? Give me an oversight. What kind of numbers did you have? What were the actions today?
Well, I'd say we probably had close to, I don't know, 60 or 70 marchers, and they marched from City Hall to Pat Toomey's office, and then from there they made an impromptu detour and went to the Comcast Center.
That's about time.
Where about 9 protesters managed to get inside the lobby and start a sit-in.
And, of course, that is private property. I would bet my bottom dollar all 9 of them were arrested.
That's correct. Actually, 10 were arrested. One was arrested outside blocking blocking the police van, and the police had to clear a number of protesters out of the way so they could clear a path to the paddy wagon.
You know, just that in itself is the reason that you need to have public space, which is the reason that people have the right under our Constitution to go to City Hall and go to the Capitol and go to local governments to petition their government for your redress. You can't do that to Comcast. They will most certainly have you arrested.
That's correct.
So, I look at this Comcast, and to me, almost the evil empire of the media world. You know, you look at the consolidation that's going on in this country and the message in smaller and smaller hands. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, one of those companies that, as I understand it, benefits from the Delaware loophole that we've allowed to continue. So I think it's a great target to go and protest that.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense. And, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware, Comcast received a massive tax subsidy in order to build their center right there down in Center City, Philadelphia. And they're a major corporate tax dodger here in the state.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen to our education system if they paid their taxes? Do you think we'd be cutting $960 million from education? Maybe if we just close that little loophole, that magic box that we allow in Delaware, do you think we'd have $960 million in education cuts?
I highly doubt it. I mean, it's a contrived crisis that our politicians are foisting on the people right now. So,
some of the messaging that I'm hearing coming out of the radical right is that the folks in the Occupy movement are just drags. They don't know why they're there. Homeless people. What are you seeing as you're interacting with the folks there in Philadelphia?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question? There was a motorcycle that drove by.
Yeah. The right-wing media has portrayed folks in the occupation movement as dregs, as malcontents, not knowing why they're there. Why are you there? And two, the people that you meet, do they fall into that right-wing frame of people who don't know why they're there and, basically just malcontents?
No, absolutely not. Everyone there, every occupation that I've been to, people have a reason for being there. The reasons are varied. There's no, one message, but I think that that's a good thing because I think that this movement addresses a lot of issues that need to be addressed to get this country back on the right course.
How many occupations have you been to?
I've been to Wall Street twice, Boston, D.C., and now Philly.
Outstanding. And any common themes between them, or are each of them different?
It's there's this overwhelming sense of purpose, honestly. And it's really, every occupation is like a fresh breath there. Everyone there is passionate, and really just very dedicated to the movement, to this Occupy movement that's sweeping the country right now.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I'm thrilled. We're talking about things that I've been talking about for years. We're actually having the conversation about income inequality. We're actually having a conversation about Wall Street destroying Main Street. We're having the conversation of Comcast and, four or five other companies controlling 80% of everything we see, hear, and read. I think this is a fantastic, this is a victory for working people, I think, already.
No question about that. No question about that. And, this movement has already changed the conversation. So, for all the people out there who say that this isn't doing anything, well, that's just flat out wrong. Every day we're hearing issues that the movement is bringing up, and they're being discussed in the media. So,
yeah, I think a major victory is the Bank of America pulling back their $5 fee. And I know it's not one of the things that the occupations, really pushed and really called for, but I think it's part of it.
Precisely. I mean, that's a very clear example, a lot of these executive orders that President Obama is pushing through, and the student loan debt reform, or I should say the break that he's giving graduates even. I think, while you can't really draw a direct connection, I suspect that the White House is hearing the people shouting very loudly that they want reform and they want change.
Well, I mean, it harkens back to what FDR said before they passed the New Deal. You want all these things? Get out in the streets and make me do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this is what's going on. People are going, we've had enough of Obama. And look, I'm frustrated with the guy. Not that Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs who are running for the Republican side are going to do me any better. But the reality is, I think Obama's someone, if we push, he's going to go.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there's no going back with this movement. I mean, Washington and the rest of the country is going to have to hear, what the people are saying. And there's really no going back with this. So
let me ask you, as the winter months come upon us, where do you see this going? Where are you going to be?
I plan to, for the most part, kind of stay in Philadelphia and focus on the movement here. I would like to do some more traveling, but the winter, you know, it's going to be a little tough, but you know what? If Valley Forge, the soldiers of Valley Forge can make it through without shoes, I'm sure we're going to do just fine.
Excellent point. I wish you nothing but the best, and we'd love to have you back again to talk about what's going on as this thing goes forward, because I'm hoping this continues. I'm hoping it moves into a warmer venue and this gains steam in a different way as well. But keep up the fight and keep out on the streets.
Thank you very much, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Dustin. Thanks so much. Dustin Slaughter, founder of the David and Goliath Project. And, you know, he's absolutely right. You know, you look at what's going on, and they have pushed the message. And, you know, like FDR said, look, you know, you want me to do these things? Make me do it. Give me the political cover. Make me do it. Give me the people in Congress to make sure that I get my agenda passed through. That's what we need to be doing. You know, had we this organization 2009, had all of the people who were activated and engaged and pumped up and ready to go in 2008, when he took office in 2009, out in the streets pushing him, saying, we got you in there, now do what we put you in here to do, this would be a much different country today. Problem is, what happened is we thought, hey, we did it, we can go home now. We can go back to doing what we need to do. Lesson learned. So let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing light is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Done it before.
I got to tell you, this song really now takes on a whole new meaning for me. Talking about the train. He can do it before. He's done it. He'll do it again. This song just takes on a whole... Was this song Clairvoyance? Did this guy know something? Because here's the reality. This scandal, as I've been saying all week, it is going to grow and grow and grow until eventually the Herman Cain train peters out. And here's the thing. I mean, you've got one of the women who was paid off. I guess she got $35,000 to leave. Her attorney saying, look, she wants to come out and talk about it. Her attorney saying, look, by doing this, the Herman Cain train has violated the terms of the contract because people know her. And I'm going to be interested to see what the Restaurant Association does, because they've been asked directly, will you let her out of the confidentiality clause so that she can address these claims? And if I'm Herman Cain, and he was asked the question, would you go to the Restaurant Association and ask them to let her go so she can tell what happened, so we can judge if this is serious or not? And his response was very, well, even the Fox News people said, kind of Clintonian, what the definition of is. Very, very heaped in legality. The man of the people now shrouding himself in the cloak of legality. Interesting. It's the best I can come up with is interesting. And what I find amazing is that what's going on right now is you had one of this ex-pollster that worked for the Restaurant Association actually said that he witnessed the incident behind one of the sexual harassment complaints. He said, look, we were all there. We all knew what happened. And everybody knew it would eventually come up. Which leads me to believe that the Cain campaign did this. There's part of me that thinks, you know what, they threw this out here to try and get it out early. They were just hoping that it would just blow over. And now we see, in addition to the two that were paid off, we're seeing a third that has come forward and said, hey, you know, I used to work for the National Restaurant Association. I was considering filing a complaint over behavior that she described as aggressive and unwanted. And according to the AP story, said that behavior included a private invitation to his corporate apartment and sexually suggestive remarks and gestures. Said the incident occurred about the same time as the other two that settled. Of course, the Cain camp, well, they don't seem to have anything to say on that. Politico is also reporting that this guy named Stephen Deese, he's a conservative talk show host in Des Moines, Iowa. Evidently, he wrote Politico in an email and said that Cain was awkward and inappropriate to his staff. Deese pointed out that the fact that Cain is never seen with his wife, he says that's almost a warning flag to him. And I think about it, I go, me too. If I see somebody in that kind of position, you never see their wife, there's a problem there. It's why I have a very male executive producer. My wife, right from the start of starting this program, starting this business, right from the start said, I love you, but no PYT, no pretty young things. You'll only get yourself into trouble. Don't tempt yourself. And she's right. My conscience, and I think a lot of guys are in that situation. And look, you're not going to tell me he wasn't drunk with power and, hey, I'm the head of the association. You should come back to my room and, honor me. And I love the right wing, who is really, really taken on to him, saying, well, this is a virtual lynching. And I love Ann Coulter and her assessment.
That's why our blacks are so much better than their blacks.
the conservative blacks are better than Democratic blacks, somehow in her view. And what I found amazing is Herman was being interviewed on one of the fake news on Fox channels. And he was asked by this Charles Krauthammer, who I really cannot stand, but he was asked this.
Mr. Kane, when Clarence Thomas was near to achieving a position of high authority, he was hit with a sexual harassment charge. You, contending for the presidency, the office of highest authority, leading in the polls, Republican nomination, all of a sudden get hit with a sexual harassment charge. Do you think that race, being a strong
race
conservative,
has anything don't do it, Herman,
to do with the fact that you've been so charged? And if so, do you have any evidence?
Don't play the race card.
That?
Don't.
I believe the answer is yes.
Oh!
But we do not have any evidence to support it. But because I am an unconventional candidate, running an unconventional campaign, and achieving some unexpected, unconventional results in terms of the poll, we believe that, yes, there are some people who are Democrats, liberals, who do not want to see me win the nomination, and there could be some people on the right who don't want to see me because I'm not the quote-unquote establishment candidate. No evidence.
But does race have any part of that? Establishment, a maverick, yes. What about race?
Relative to the left, I believe that race is a bigger driving factor. I don't think it's a driving factor on the right.
He just got done saying there are some on the right who don't want me. Who don't, and it's a race thing. And then he said, oh, I don't believe it's on the right. I wish the guy would make up his mind. In fact, you know, I love the, it is, yes, it's race, but we don't have evidence.
Do you have any evidence to support that?
I believe the answer is yes, but we do not have any evidence to support it.
Yes, the answer is yes, but I have no evidence, of course. And look, the reality is this has nothing to do with race. This has everything to do with him doing what he's accused of doing, probably. In fact, by having the settlement, that's kind of almost an admission. It's kind of like pleading guilty. You know, we've paid out. There was something that went on. Let's find out what it was. Let's bring the woman out. Let's bring all of them out and say, what happened? You know, if he said something inappropriate words, I got a problem with the position of power and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's a whole different world from, you know, if you remember Representative Packwood, I forget where he was from, somewhere in the Midwest, pushing a woman in the elevator and groping her in the elevator. A whole different world. So let's find out. But in that interview, he said something about business that really grabbed my attention and really should shock people in the way they think about the Herman Cain train.
In business organizations that I have run, whenever there has been an employee leaving, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, we would generally call it an agreement.
Have you ever left a job involuntarily and you said it was an agreement? Like you just woke up one day and your boss said, you know what? You're not doing a good job. And you go, you know, you're right. I'm really not. And he goes, I'm firing you. Oh, okay. Let's agree to that. No, there's no such thing as an involuntary agreement. But that's the mentality. I got to be honest. Cain, trouble. And what's even bigger trouble for me is the fact that, set the sex stuff aside, set the harassment stuff aside. It's his limited worldview. It's his limited understanding of what's going on in the world. And I hate to say that, but, you know, I look at the reality. He was interviewed by PBS's NewsHour with that Judy Woodruff. And, you know, they talked about the whole sex thing. And I just, you know, do away with that. She asked him about China and asked if, you know, he understood foreign policy and understand, you know, are they a threat? And he said, yeah, they're a military threat. They've indicated that they're trying to develop nuclear capacities or nuclear capabilities. So, yes, we have to consider them a nuclear threat, a military threat. China has had nuclear weapons longer than I've been alive. You know, I thought everyone knew that. Evidently, Herman's not one of those people. So, you know, is this the kind of guy you want taking office? I mean, say what you want about Obama and limited experience, but this is a guy who doesn't even know the very simple stuff. He knows how to run a good marketing campaign, though. And maybe, who knows, maybe that's what we need. And as far as liberals not wanting him to win the Republican nomination, oh, Herman, there are people begging for you. Trust me, the left wants you. Anyway, let's look around, enough about Herman. Let's look at the rest of the Republican field, which it doesn't get any better from Herman down. Going down from Herman, probably not a good way of framing that. But it looks like Michelle Bachmann, a day late and an idea short, she's offering signed books to anyone who donates money to her. The Core of Conviction, My Story book, will be autographed by Michelle herself for $125. Campaign donors who just want, the book, $75. So here you go. This is, she should have been doing this all along because Herman had it right. Do the book tour. And I don't know who would pay almost $27 for her book anyway, but I definitely don't know anyone who would want one signed, for three times as much. But good for her. I don't know if you saw this right-wing radio host. I was looking at this guy, this Brian Fisher with the American Family Alliance or Association or whatever it is. One of the crazy right-wing groups. He's on like this Christian network that is, oh my goodness. Just scary on so many levels. But he had something interesting to say. He said that if Governor Romney is selected as the party's nominee, it will be the end of the Republican Party as a political force forever. That's it. Done. He says, they're going to go after him as a flip-flopper, as a governor with a windsock, which is kind of a nice way of putting that. He said one of the reasons they hope Romney wins the nomination is because they believe it will take Obamacare off the table. Obamacare is Romneycare. Because it's a start. It's a step in the right direction, I think. I wish we would have gone much, much further, Brian. But to say that it's the end of the party, well, from your lips to your God's ears. And it is God Day, so maybe he is listening. Rick Perry, more than a third of Texans say that Rick Perry is hurting the state's image by running for president. That's according to a poll from the University of Texas and the Texas Tribune. 19%, surprisingly, 19% say that he's actually helping the state's image, while the host of an event in New Hampshire last week said that Perry, who gave a very odd speech, wasn't drunk. So I guess that's a ringing endorsement. And President Obama, he's the guy who's got to be laughing all the way to the polls because he's beating everybody now. And to be honest, the way things are going, I'm not sure he should be. Maybe we see some more of this infrastructure talk, maybe push for some jobs. Maybe I can see that coming up. But Obama beats Romney 47-42, beats Kane 50-40, beats Rick Perry 52-36, and beats Newt Gingrich 52-37. Kane, for the time being, I'm sure this poll was taken long before victim number three came forward. He was leading the field with a 30-point number. Romney came in second with 23%, and Gingrich has jumped up to 10%. Nobody else came into double digits. There's Rick Perry down there with 8. So a good drop there. So the president's got to be thrilled, and me too. It's nice to see Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs, and the Herman Cain train take a dive. And you got to laugh because you knew it was going to kind of happen. They really built that guy up. They really, which leads me to believe they had to know this was stewing in the background. That's why I think Cain had to be behind this because he really doesn't want to be president. He doesn't want to do all that work. He wants to sell books and be a media figure. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Susie Cagle out in Oakland about Occupy Oakland. Stick around. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Occupy Oakland is carrying out a general strike and march to shut down Oakland's port today, just days after a police attack on the protest that hospitalized Iraq War veteran Scott Olson. They're calling on workers and students everywhere to launch similar actions. Occupy Oakland's Louise Michael and Boots Riley.
We make the call for general strikes across the country and the world because globally we have recognized ourselves as fellow victims of world capitalism. And now we are building movements so that we won't be victims anymore.
We will march on the Port of Oakland and shut it down. We are doing this in order to blockade the flow of capital on the day of the general strike, as well as to show our commitment to solidarity with the longshore workers in their struggle against EGT in Longview, Washington.
International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 10 President Richard Mead.
We support the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Occupy Oakland movement. We condemn the police action that took place a week and a half ago, Local 10 and West Coast Longshoremen. We were born out of a general strike that resulted from police violence when six of our members up and down the West Coast were shot and killed in 1934. We think that global shipping and the global economy, you know, the Wall Street, the too big to fail, is an absolutely appropriate target.
ILWU Local 10 Executive Board Member Clarence Thomas.
This is a movement about fighting corporate rule with worker power. Capitalism has failed us.
Medicaid cuts are threatening to cut off health care for millions. Jesse Russell looks at the Wisconsin impact.
One day after Wisconsin's Department of Health Services sent out Medicaid reform plans that could result in thousands of Wisconsinites being shifted to a plan with higher premiums and reduced benefits, and thousands of others falling off the rolls completely, Families USA has issued a report regarding how the Affordable Care Act will benefit Wisconsinites by expanding Medicaid, essentially the opposite of the Wisconsin reforms. Robert Craig is director of the consumer advocacy group Citizen Action of Wisconsin.
What the Walker administration is proposing is adopting policies that will force tens of thousands of families out of Badger Care and with no other viable option. And so it's really night and day, the comparison between that policy and what happened under the Affordable Care Act.
The Families USA report looks at the year 2019 because the authors wanted to choose a time when all the Act's reforms had matured. According to the report, the Act will put more money back in the pockets of Wisconsinites, with households that earn less than $100,000 per year, saving on average $2,040. Households with incomes under $30,000 per year will save on average $3,405 per year.
Bank of America dropped its $5 debit card fee after customer Molly Catchpole launched a campaign against it on Change.org. More than 300,000 people from all 50 states forced Bank of America to drop the fee. Citi, Chase, Wells Fargo, and SunTrust also dropped similar fees after Molly's campaign was launched. This newscast made possible in part by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We don't get it! Shut it down! If we don't get it! Shut it down! If we don't get it! Shut it down! If we don't get it! Shut it down!
That is what appears to be happening as we speak out in Oakland, California. Earlier we had a caller call in and talk about some 20,000 people he estimated shutting down the port of Oakland. And again, you know, the right-wing media out this way saying, hey, well, it's a flop. There's only a couple hundred people out there. The pictures I'm seeing, there's no flop going on. This is actually shutting something down. So I've asked Susie Cagle, cartoonist and journalist for our friends over at Alternate Truth Out and other California-based groups to come talk to us. She is in Oakland at the Occupy. Susie, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
20,000 people, is that a reasonable estimate?
Sounds reasonable to me. There's been a lot of debate. I think people are saying 10,000 on the low end, and then I've heard 40,000 from some very optimistic people.
Got an email during the break. Fox News is reporting that nobody's there.
Sure. Well, I haven't seen Fox News leave the comfort of their little table that they've got set up on the plaza here, surrounded by bodyguards waiting for people to come up to talk to them, so I'm not sure how they would know.
But then again, they were reporting from Malibu. So let me ask you, you know, as things have gone on, Oakland has seemed to become, aside from New York, almost the epicenter of activity. You know, when we talked to Josh Holland the night that the police were bombing people, the night that all hell broke loose out there, it has been the epicenter almost. What kind of support are you getting from the people out there? What kind of numbers are coming out? Tell me what's going on.
in terms of support from around the country or in Oakland specifically?
First in Oakland and then across the country.
Oakland has a really long history of activism in many different forms, and I think that this is largely a product of that history. It's a pretty unique history. Black Panthers originated here. Last general strike in America was here 65 years ago. I think that plays in large part to how big this is and how meaningful it is for a wide demographic of Oakland residents. And Occupy Oakland is getting support from across the world. There were demonstrators marched on the U.S. Embassy in Tahrir Square the other day in solidarity with Occupy Oakland.
You know, you talk about the West Coast, and, you know, today is Free Speech Day. Back in 1909, the IWW had the free speech fights up in Spokane, Washington. 150 people arrested on this day in 1909. And what's interesting is you look at, you know, it's been 100 years, and what's changed? The same kind of things we're talking about: income inequality, the division of the economic pie, people, you know, fighting for their rights in the streets.
It's true, and if anything, it's just become more and more extreme. And I think it's that extreme. The extremeness of the 1% having so much of the wealth that has gotten many different people out in the streets today. I was really impressed to see such a broad range of people, lots of little kids, lots of older people. It's something to behold.
You know, I looked at what happened when the police started tear gassing people and using rubber bullets, and I hearkened back to the railroad magnate Jay Gould, who back in the 1880s, 1890s, said, "I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half." And I look at that and I say, you know, those police officers, they're part of the 99% as well. Their pensions are tied up in what happened in Wall Street. Their future's tied up in this movement succeeding.
Absolutely, and I think everyone here was very glad to see an incredibly minimal police presence today. Knock on wood, so far, things are still happening, but I've been out on several marches. I've been here since 9 a.m., and I've seen 7 police officers and nobody in riot gear. And I think that really goes a long way to keeping things much more peaceful. Oakland has a long history with the Oakland Police Department, a lot of controversy, and even just seeing a police officer with their baton out, it freaks people out in a different way than I think in other cities that don't have the same history of such extreme brutality.
Well, I think it freaks people out in general because this is the United States of America. We're trained from a very young age that cop is our friend. And you don't really want to see a cop on the street with the stick and the whole riot gear that you expect in some third world countries. You don't expect to see that on your own streets.
You don't. And one of the more revealing aspects of, I think, how difficult this must be for them, for me, was on Tuesday night. I was in all of that melee. And every time I would go up to an officer, I would try very hard to make conversation with them or try to make eye contact. And I could not get a single police officer that night to look me in the eye. And that was chilling.
Who's to blame for that?
Oh, where do we start?
I mean, do you blame the mayor? Do you blame the chief of police? Do you blame the individual officers, or yes?
I blame primarily the chief of police and the city administrator, Deanna Santana, who in large part, it sounds like, orchestrated especially the evening violence after the initial raid. I believe that the mayor was responsible for that initial raid, but, you know, she skipped town, and it was Deanna Santana and the chief of police, Jordan, who were in charge of everything that happened from about 5 p.m. until early the next morning. Many, many rounds of CS gas, rubber bullets, beanbags. We've all seen the videos.
Yep.
It's all true.
You know, I look at the money that was spent, and I'm told somewhere around the $5 million mark, and I wonder what would have happened had we just used a couple of thousand to put up porta-potties and maybe put out a couple of trash cans.
Sure. I think it would have gone much like I believe it's going to go tonight, where people feel happy. People are glad that they're getting to go out and speak their piece, and it's staying peaceful. And I think it's in large part because we don't see the police around. People are not up in arms and feeling scared, which often makes people act out.
I know tomorrow I'm going to turn on the right-wing hate mongers. I'm going to look at right-wing media, and they're going to poster pictures of a-holes doing dumb things. Are you seeing any of that going on?
Oh, sure. There's a-holes everywhere. There has been some pretty targeted property destruction. I would say just vandalism, spray painting, broken windows. But I have only seen that at very large banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank. They got it pretty good here downtown. But, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at the State of California building, look right over at the Federal Building and City Hall. All of those are fine. There are actually many local businesses that one of the right-wing complaints was you're going to hurt all of these local businesses. You're speaking out against capitalism, but you're going to screw the little guy. And a lot of these local businesses are open tonight. A lot of them only accepting cash, not accepting credit or debit cards, in solidarity with the 9%, 99%.
Like that.
Yeah, a lot of them handing out free water. It's great.
You know, and it sounds like, you know, I've been saying all week that there are very distinct victories in this whole movement. One of them being the fact that too big to fail banks have pulled back on their fee structure a little bit.
Yes, that does seem to be a solid victory. To me, the greatest victory out of all of this has been changing the national conversation.
Absolutely.
We were not talking about jobs and unemployment and wealth the way that we were a month ago. And I think that is huge, huge strides.
So as you look at what's going on tonight, how long do you think this, I think you said upwards of 40,000 people have been reported there. How long do you think this is going to go, and what do you think the response will be tomorrow?
It's certainly going to go late into the night. I know that there is another march planned for 10 p.m. tonight. I'm not sure where that's going to go, but it's meeting downtown at 14th and Broadway, kind of the heart of Occupy Oakland. And, you know, I kind of think tomorrow will be Occupy Oakland back to normal and some regrouping and some decision-making about where do people go from here, what's the next thing to look forward to for the movement?
Right.
I think that these big events are very important to keeping energy up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How long do you think this, where people are going to be sleeping out? I know Oakland's a little bit better than, say, New York City or Chicago or here in Harrisburg or Philadelphia where people are camping out. How long do you think this will go?
We don't have all those weather problems here. I'm not really sure. I have heard a rumor, just a rumor, that the city is talking about, the 10th being the next deadline, November 10th. And personally, I think it's just kind of silly that they would even be trying to set another deadline. I honestly can't say. People are really talking about being here for the long haul. There's talk of making paved walkways through the plaza so that it's more wheelchair accessible. Putting in solar and wiring the whole camp with electricity so it's more well lit and safe. There are a lot of people here working on some really long-term infrastructure that I think is very interesting, and I think certainly goes to show how long they're planning to stay.
You're investing in infrastructure, and we've got a country where our government can't decide to invest in our nation's infrastructure. It's just amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're building a second library here because the first one is too full.
You know, when we were in Wisconsin back in February, when they had occupied the Capitol, what struck me there was, you know, the fact that they set up areas for health care, areas for child care, areas to make sure people got fed, areas for meetings and libraries, and they set up all the things that a democracy, a society would need, and they were able to do that by consensus, and it just amazes me that this is what we see springing up as we speak, and I think Wisconsin was really the precursor to this, and I'm excited what the future holds here.
I am too. I think it'll be a wild ride.
How long do you plan on staying?
I'm in it for the long haul. I've been here since the first day. I've only missed a few. So I'm very interested to see how the camp evolves over time. I've already seen so many changes. I'm really interested to see more.
Do you have a job, or you do freelance stuff?
I am full-time freelance.
Okay, well, I mean, at least you're working. That's great. You know, because it doesn't fit in that frame of just a bunch of unemployed folks wandering around the park, which I hear my right-wing friends say all the time. Would love to have you come back and tell us what's going on out there in Oakland as this moves down the road.
That would be great.
Susie, I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
Susie Cagle, cartoonist and journalist over at Alternate and Truth Out. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.